Hello. Welcome to Pressure Drop, the program about the business of weather. Good morning. My name is Ian Harper. I'm speaking to you from the International Conference on Energy Meteorology here in Bari. This morning, I've got with me Florence Rabier, Andreas Steiner, Sue Hout, and Jonas van Schumann.
Hello, I'm Olivia Steiner. I'm a meteorologist and I work at the German Weather Service in the Department for Meteorological Analysis and Modeling. My work contributes to cooperation projects with the energy sector, where the DWD focuses on improving its weather forecasts for renewable energy applications.
Hi, my name is Florence Rabier. I'm Director General of ECMWF, which is the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts. We are specialised in global numerical weather predictions, so we do forecasts up to 15 days, a few months. We also do reanalysis, and we contribute to two Copernicus services from the European Commission.
And I'm Sue Haupt. I'm a Director of Weather Systems and Assessment in the research application lab of the National Center for Atmospheric Research in the US. Our group takes research and translates it into applications, and one of our specialties is translating the weather information and the forecasting capabilities into real wind and solar power forecasts using lots of different techniques, blending the model physics with artificial intelligence and putting out entire systems.
My name is Jonas van Schumann, and I also work at the German Weather Service in a project to optimize the ensemble forecast for the needs of the renewable energies.
Right, well, good morning. Now, the question I'm going to be focusing in on here is, how accurate can meteorological forecasting be? Now, I'm a layperson. I have no faith in weather forecasts. They're always wrong. How good can they be, though? Andrea.
Well, I think that in the next few years, with increasing computing power and some innovative model developments, I'm sure we can get substantial model improvement. But the atmosphere remains a chaotic system, and so right now already it's important for us to also give information about the forecast uncertainty. And what we are doing is we're doing ensemble forecasts, and this information about the uncertainty of NWP forecast can also be used in power forecasts for the renewable energy sector, for example. They can make best or worst case scenarios. So I think this is an important way to go to tackle the uncertainty of our forecasts.
What do you think, Florence? Can we have the perfect weather forecast?
There's no perfection in this world, but we can have as good as possible weather forecasts. I would say that when you look at the global weather forecast, it has improved by one day per decade. This is how we measure it, which is we are pushing the limit of predictability of the atmosphere by one day per decade. So the accuracy of the weather forecast today at the five-day range, so in 5 days in the future, is as accurate as 4 days in the future 10 years ago. And we've sustained this rhythm in the last few decades. So I think this is quite remarkable that we managed still to increase the predictability of the atmosphere up to this point. Of course, there might be a limit at some point, and as she was saying, you know, we need ensemble prediction, for instance, to reflect the uncertainties in the atmosphere. And the further we go in the time range, the less precise in the location, for instance, information you will get, and you will more have big features. For instance, El Niño, we can predict it up to 1 year, but we can't predict really the temperature in Bari at this point in time 1 year ahead. We can have just big features of the atmosphere. So it is accurate, and we can predict it up to, let's say, a year ahead, but with increasing time scales and also spatial scales. So it depends what you want.
What about you, Jona? Surely you can get more accurate than that.
Well, we already are at a very high level of accuracy, and I think we can increase the accuracy of power forecasts by teaching how to use our forecasts to the users and so increasing the usage of our ability to spread the advantages.
What about you, Sue? Can business rely on long-range weather forecasts in the next few years?
Not on long-range forecasts, but one of the needs of the utility industry really is very short-range forecasts within the next few minutes, hours, and days. And those forecasts we're getting quite good at. We're taking the numerical weather predictions and improving them with artificial intelligence. And in the very short range, it depends on having instruments in the field. With sufficient instruments, if you measure what the wind speed or solar radiance is right now, for the next 5 minutes, it's going to change very little. But we have techniques now that start to predict changes as well. And as we're predicting those changes over the next few minutes and hours and into the next day, that really helps the energy industry make plans on how to integrate the renewable energy into the grid. That's helping a lot, and they're finding that even on those scales, having the uncertainty information helps them to allocate their reserve units more wisely and use the renewables to the best advantage possible.
What has changed as a result of increasing weather forecasting accuracy? What industries have benefited? We've heard about energy. Is energy the main one, the only one, or are there others?
Energy is obviously one big application that uses the weather information, but we have a lot more, like agriculture, building, construction. You know, if you need to lay the foundations of a building, you need to know when it's going to be favorable conditions. So agriculture, transportation, of course, you know the everybody in the ships, the planes, everybody uses, of course, the wind information in particular to try to dodge the stormy weather, but also how to save fuel in order to get the right altitude for the planes, for instance. But I think it's also important to know that meteorology is now feeding out to other applications such as hydrology or even atmospheric composition forecasts, which can help predicting when there is, for instance, particular conditions for asthma, so it can help also for the health. So there are a whole range of applications, not only energy, although it's one of the big ones.
What about you, Jonas? What do you think?
Yeah, renewable energies is one of the new consumers of our weather forecasts. And at the German Weather Service, we just started to adjust our weather forecast for these new users. And
increasing weather forecasting accuracy cut our carbon footprint faster than we could do it otherwise, do you think?
I think it can surely contribute a lot to that. Germany, for example, right now we have 31% of our gross electricity production provided by renewables, and if we consider only the renewables, there are more than 60% wind and PV power. So if we have better forecasts, weather forecasts, which also then produce better power forecasts for the weather-dependent renewables, we can also more efficiently incorporate that in our electricity grid. We can guarantee the safety of the electricity grid and we'll make it also more affordable for everyone.
What about you, Sue?
Yes, I think that weather forecasting is making a big difference. In the U.S., we've worked with some utilities looking at how it changes how they allocate their units and how they allocate their reserves. And they're finding that, with Xcel Energy, that's the utility in the US that has the highest penetration of wind energy. And they found that having forecasts that are very specialized beyond just what they can get from a national center saves them about $10 million a year that they calculated themselves based on changes in their production costs.
That's fantastic, $10 million a year because of increasing weather forecasting accuracy. But how good is it? How good is weather forecasting accuracy at the moment? What's changed in the last decade? Florence.
So we consider that now the forecast quality is really excellent for the first week of the forecast. We compute the correlation between our forecast and the verifying analysis, the verification, and we reach a correlation of 80%. down to 7 days in the forecast, which is excellent. But again, these are for the big features of the atmosphere. This is not point-wise prediction, but this is something we certainly didn't have before. But I think what's important as well is that precipitation, 10-meter wind, 2-meter temperature, these are difficult parameters. Radiation at the surface, these are difficult parameters to predict. And this is where we have to spend the efforts as well to predict the weather as well as just the general atmospheric circulation. And I think with a lot of physical hindsight in the physical processes that we put into the model with better observations, we can still progress on those.
Right.
With a grid of the model as well. So, you know, if you have a model with a fine grid, of course you will be able, you will better be able to depict the valleys, for instance, so where to put a wind farm or things like that. You will have a much better description of that. But to have fine grids in your model, you need big computers. So I think it's not only the science, it's also the computing science and how they fit together that will help us progress even better.
How important are the computers? I mean, we seem to have gone on by leaps and bounds in terms of computing power. Now we're looking at quantum computing, whatever that is. But are we in for a sea change as computers becoming even more powerful? Will we get to that perfect forecast or near it?
Again, I don't like to talk about perfect forecasts, sorry. But we can certainly improve with the new computers coming. But I think we are really at a turning point in terms of computer. Nobody knows what will be the technology that will emerge in the next few years. And it's, for instance, we had these graphical processes compared to computing processes that have emerged, and we have this quantum thing. So it's all very exciting. But I think what it will need more computing scientists working very closely with the scientists writing the equations of the model so that we can make the best use of these computers. And so we can fit the best models in these computers, and that will save energy as well. We want to be energy efficient in our use of computing, which means adapting our code, our computing code, to the architecture. So I think that's also a very exciting area of work in our field.
Just a small aside here in a way, but if you want computing scientists these days, you have to go to Frankfurt or the City of London. They're all working in financial derivatives and things such as that. Is meteorological forecasting a business which pays the top brains enough money to work in it? Is this an issue?
It's an issue where, no, if you're working in the national centers or research organizations, you're not making as much money. But many of us get really excited about doing something that has a positive impact on society. And sometimes that's worth more than the financial compensation.
Couldn't agree more.
Looking at the potential of increasing forecasting accuracy, what do you see on the horizon? Obviously the potential implications for energy as the accuracy improves, but what other areas within society do you see there being opportunities developed from this which might create new wealth, new employment, new opportunities? What do you think? Jonas?
Well, new opportunities, I would say, with the more accurate forecasts. I think there is a certain limit because of this chaotic system, so we also need the uncertainties of our forecasts. And we have both information, our accuracy, our best forecast we can get, and also the information where the weaknesses, where the uncertainties. We can use this information to make the best decision we can.
What do you think, Andrea? Do you see any new opportunities coming along on the horizon?
I can speak for the energy sector again. In Germany, the case is that the German Weather Service is not doing any power forecasts. This is done by the private sector, and then there are private firms which are, have been startups, and there are already new startups, and it's a new field of work that came up in the last years.
So there's a lot of small businesses getting into this area and providing these forecasts.
Yes.
So to the big utilities?
Yes, as well. The transmission system operators in Germany, for example, they are buying power forecasts provided by private power forecast providers, and then they are doing a multi-model mix and get the best forecast out of that.
So Alan, you come from the home of private enterprise, some might say. Well, what do you think? What's happening? What new opportunities are being opened up by increasing weather forecasting accuracy?
Oh, in the US, we see lots of advances, both by the big players like IBM, Panasonic, some of these groups that are doing their own weather forecasts now, to some of the smaller startups that are taking technology that has been developed for very specialized applications like energy and forming startup companies and bridging the gap between the research organizations who are starting, who have found the best ways to forecast, but then working directly with the clients and selling those forecasts in ways that the research organizations really don't have an interest in doing. So these startups tend to be doing really quite well in the U.S. There's only room for a certain number of them, but some of the ones that I'm familiar with are really making an impact on how utilities do their work and translating the information from the weather organizations to the clients.
What do you think, Florence?
Yeah, I think I would have a good example of this, and in particular it's how to translate our information for farmers who want to know when to sow, when to do their crops, etc. And if they just get our forecast as such, it doesn't help. But having somebody, we have small companies working with us to get our data and then process it in the way that actually the farmers can understand what they mean, etc. So they do nice applications, and it needs a lot of interactions with the end user. And of course, that's not what we are doing. But there are all these small companies who can have services for the end users that can translate all this richness of our information into what is really useful for the end user.
When it comes to small business, they need to get funding, but one of the big things they lack is information, if you like. Do you as ECMWF hold, what would you call them, road shows where you could talk to small business, where you go into the universities and tell them about these opportunities? Is this something that happens?
Actually, ECMWF is a bit behind its member states. It's more our member states, which are the national Met services in general, that are spreading the information on how to use our products.
Right.
We are a bit the engine behind that. But still, we have one show, which is not a traveling show, but we have one event per year, which is called Using ECMWF Forecast. It's 1 week in June where both academia, national Met services, and private sectors can come and interact with us, and they can learn from what we're doing, and we can learn from what their needs are. But we are usually one step removed from the end users, so we are not doing that sort of reach.
Right. One thing that strikes me as being central to this increasing forecasting accuracy is the cooperation between the public and the private sectors. Is that a crucial interaction taking place? What do you think? What do you think, Sue-Ann?
Oh, very much so. In the U.S., I'd add the academic sector, where the research is being done, to part of that, as well as the public. And, you know, when you bring all those groups together, you can really have the synergy that generates something that really can make it better, you know, can make the forecast better, can really talk to the private sector, understand what the needs are, so that then some of the smaller companies can translate what the weather centers do and what the researchers do into what's most useful to the private sector. So it really does take that continuity between all the groups, and communication especially.
What do you think, Andrea?
Well, it's essential. The UNDER-LP forecast providers, for example, they need to understand the needs of the power forecast providers. They need to know about the challenges in order that they can optimize the weather forecast accordingly. And the users of these weather and power forecasts, they need to understand the value of the forecast, how they can use the forecast. So dialogue is the most important thing.
One of the things that's come up in some of the interviews I've been doing is the role of data, the importance of data to just about every activity. Now, though, I've heard of strains in the past between the public and the private sectors over data, not just when it comes to Met data, but other types of data. Is that an issue in this field too? the conflict of interest between the public and private sectors over access and use of data? Florence.
Yes, in Europe we are not so much into the completely open data sector as in the US, for instance, but we are getting more and more into that, and we are giving more and more of our data open and freely available, and all our data anyway, even if it's not sometimes free of charge, it's openly available and people can access it through a license. But more with the EU, there is more and more open data policy. So I think our data can be accessible to the users, and sometimes they might complain that the interface might not be suitable. And what we are really trying to make an effort at the moment to make it easier to use, because the data is getting big and big and bigger, and it's actually difficult. We used to push the data to the users, now it's becoming a bit impossible. So we are going to work very hard to create a sort of cloud service around the data so that people can come and access the data and even have tools to process the data where they are. So to make it even much easier for people to use our data, which might have been not so good some years ago, and now with the explosion of data, with our models increasing, etc., the size of our data is growing, we really have to make an effort to make it more easily accessible for the non-specialists.
What do you think, Sue Ellen? Does access to data influence the number of small businesses which can be set up and make commercial enterprises?
Certainly, and in the U.S., the publicly generated data is all available, and like ECMWF, NOAA has a data CRADA with five major cloud providers, where they're putting data up there that it's easily accessible, and companies can use the data on the sites where they are. Now, we also have data needs in the opposite direction, where if we can get data from the utilities themselves at the sites, we can improve the forecasts. But that has been difficult in the past. We need non-disclosure agreements to get those data. But many of the national centers are pushing to become trusted stewards of that data, where they could hold that private but use it to make the forecast better. And we find when we do customized forecasts, having data in the field can make a very large improvement in the forecast itself. So the folks who provide the data are going to benefit the most, because the forecasts are going to become better at their sites.
So they could provide that data increase. For instance, a wind farm owner in Tok, Texas, could provide a lot of data from the height at the top of a wind farm to mm-hmm. NOAA. NOAA could aggregate that data with other data, increase the accuracy of the forecast. That benefits the wind farm owner. But probably, as far as the Texan cattle baron is concerned with his wind farm, he can still use that data in a proprietary way with other potential users?
Exactly. It's still his data, but NOAA would have the ability to use it and improve forecasts for all of Texas, in your example. So not only would we have better wind forecasts for the wind farm that provided us with that data, but we also would make better weather forecasts for the same region.
Does that happen in Europe, Florence?
Not so much for the time being, and being in the field of global weather forecasting, I would like all data to be exchanged freely as much as possible. And that's one of the risks with these proprietary data, that they would be given to one center to help them, but not exchange. And in meteorology, we had this habit of exchanging all the data freely from continent to continent. We benefited so much in Europe from the advance of the US, who provided so many satellite data to us. Now we can reciprocate with some good satellite data from Europe, etc. But I think this concept of sharing all the data with all the national centers and all, is actually quite beneficial. So I would like to have more data coming in, but if it could be shared as well with other centers, it would be for the benefit of everyone as well.
Right, so NOAA can get the data from the cattle baron in Texas, but they couldn't give it to ECMWF to use for their forecasting model. Is that correct?
Well, in a perfect world, the NDA would allow NOAA to share it with other weather centers, but what What's usually the limiting factor is the wind farm owner or the utility doesn't want it shared directly with their competitors. One could still avoid sharing it directly with their competitors under what Florence is proposing.
Right. Okay, let's bring this to a conclusion then. Let's take a quick look ahead. Where are we going in terms of weather accuracy? The next 10 years, what does it hold out? What opportunities are going to be opened up? Come on, put your reputation on the line here. Let me have some real intelligent guesses. Come on.
I think where we are going to focus on in the next few years in a renewable energy context is that we are facing new extreme weather situations. Extreme weather situations in the standard NWP or weather sense are, for example, storms or cold fronts. They influence our day-to-day weather. They are important for wind power production, for example, as well. But there are new extreme weather situations where we have to improve our models right now. For example, if we have subsidence inversions and low stratus conditions, so overcast skies the whole day, this influences our PV power production, and there we have to focus on getting better forecasts.
Jonas, what do you think? Where are we going?
Are we going more accurate weather forecasts? When we get more data, it becomes more accurate. But also, we increase our ensemble forecasts. We get more ensemble members to measure or to estimate the uncertainties in forecasts.
Can we join weather forecasting and climate change? Can we bring them together so that a weather forecast becomes a climate forecast? Is that where we're heading, Florence?
Yes, I think more and more that the models are becoming the same. For instance, the model we are using now, we don't call it an atmospheric model anymore. It's coupled with the ocean, with the land, with the sea ice, etc. It might be coupled with aerosols, ozone, etc., which are very much the models which are used for climate prediction, because actually including all these processes, we improve the forecast, and we can also produce more, for instance, atmospheric composition forecasts, which are quite relevant for a range of applications as well. So I think we are converging. It's a seamless system, more or less. So it's the same weather and climate. There's a continuum. You can't really call one the weather and one the climate. It's basically a continuum, and we learn from each other. For instance, this coupling with the ocean, it came basically from the climate models, but now we use it for the prediction in the medium range.
Yep.
And on the other hand, they can validate their climate model in a run in the first few days to validate them as well. So we are working more and more in a continuous manner.
Sue Ellen, I shouldn't be asking you about climate change, but what do you think?
Okay, so there certainly is a push to unify models on the weather scales and the climate scales. But it goes also in the other direction, where we're unifying models from the weather scales into the wind plant scales. We're moving toward having wind plants that can optimize control so that we get more power out of the plant by being able to even point the front row of turbines in a particular direction so that their weight does not hit the second row as badly. So to have that type of control, you also need to be able to do micro-scale modeling of the wind plant, which is a different type of model. But there's a lot of work being done, especially in the U.S. right now, on coupling the mesoscale models with the micro-scale models so that you can do that smooth transition that has historically been very hard. Doing things like building three-dimensional turbulence models, again, something that hasn't been done in weather models, now is being done at very fine scales. Just saw a talk by some NOAA folks in the last session where they showed that going down to 750 meter resolution in complex terrain made a substantial improvement in the forecast. I think as we, in the next 10 years, as we start developing exascale computers, not only are we going to be doing more climate simulations, but we're also going to be doing more micro-scale simulations enabled by the higher computing power.
Well, we'll conclude the session there, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.